RNE Audio. Descarga la app y disfruta de los programas de RNE y nuestros podcasts originales. Radio Exterior de España.
English Language Service.
Welcome to today's broadcast, in which we will learn about Dreamscapes, the first poetry chapbook published fully in English by Spanish writer Jorge López Llorente.
Poetry really gets you to think about language in a way that no other type of writing does.
You're listening to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio, where we bring Spain to you through shortwave. With Amy Egan and Marilyn Quintana, today we have help from sound technician Rodrigo López and production help from Cristina Dorado. Before we get into the rest of the broadcast, the news. An 8.8 magnitude earthquake hit the east coast of Russia on Wednesday morning. The strongest earthquake in the area since 1952 and the 8th strongest earthquake on record, according to the Spanish Institute of Geosciences. The strength of this earthquake triggered tsunami warnings in several regions of the Pacific, including Russia, Japan, the United States, and South America. Regional and national authorities have activated emergency protocols. As of Wednesday afternoon, the Russian emergency services already registered 3 to 4 meter waves in the southeast of the peninsula of Kamchatka. Back in Spain, fires continue wreaking havoc in the country. In the province of Ávila, 1,000 neighbors had to be confined due to a fire in the south of the region. And in Extremadura, hundreds of residents in Las Hurdes had to be evacuated due to a nearby fire. More than 2,500 hectares have been scorched as of Wednesday afternoon. 30% of the fire has been stabilized, but its evolution depends on the winds and meteorological conditions. Abel Bautista, regional minister of the presidency, recognized the situation is complicated.
Es muy complicada la situación, no es nada fácil y no tenemos a la vista cuándo puede terminar.
Meanwhile, in Ávila, there are no official estimates of the area burned, but experts speak of around 600 hectares. No casualties have been reported, but an emergency technician was injured when working on this fire. In economy, inflation in Spain rose in July for the second consecutive month, reaching 2.7% year on year. This increase is due to the rising electricity prices and fuel. Core inflation stayed at 2.3% year on year, but it is 1/10 higher than June and 4 points higher than the overall value. And in the second trimester of the year, the country's GDP increased 0.7%. Minister of Economy Carlos Cuerpo celebrated this data.
La economía española mantiene su dinamismo y esto nos posiciona entre las economías avanzadas líderes, no solo en Europa, sino también a nivel internacional.
The Spanish economy maintains its dynamism and this places us among the leading advanced economies, not only in Europe, but globally. This surge was mainly thanks to the increase in private consumption and investment. And on a lighter note, film director and writer Gonzalo Suárez has been selected to receive the 2026 Honorary Goya Award. The Asturian director was chosen unanimously by the Spanish Film Academy. He had some words after learning about this distinction. What I appreciated most was that it was granted unanimously, because although they are colleagues, I think it's one of the things that I appreciate. With a decades-long career behind his back, he has directed more than 20 films. He won the Goya for Best Directing in 1988 with the film Rowing with the Wind. His work is characterized by mixing genres and formal freedom.
You're listening to the English Language Service of Spanish National Radio.
Ooh, feel.
She makes Arabic words dance and hearts tremble to the rhythm of flamenco and Cuban percussion. Hanin Abu Shakra, a passionate Lebanese singer, carves her musical path between the Orient and Latin America. A couple of days ago, she performed during the Batroum International Festival, infusing the night with emotion, memories, and radiant energy, a unique blend of Oriental warmth and Hispanic passion. Our correspondent in Lebanon, Elsa Yazbek Sharabati, interviewed her in this report.
Her name is Hanin Abu Shakra, a velvety voice, mixed rhythms, a musical bridge between the Arabic and Latin world. For several years now, this Lebanese artist has passionately fused traditional Arabic music with Hispanic rhythms, especially Cuban, flamenco, and other Latin sounds. A rare artistic approach in the region, but one that finds a powerful echo among her fans. Why this fusion? Let's listen to Hanin's passionate answer.
We are talking about a choice we made a long time ago when I used to work with Eleftheriades Productions. We decided to make this fusion between the Arabic and the Latin music and Cuban music especially, and we knew since the first day the ability of the Arabic music to make fusions with any type of music, because our Arabic music is very wide with all its maqams and etc. And we chose the Latin music because there is many things in common between us, and because there is traits of cultures in common between us and the Latin community in general, and especially in the history, we have common traits with the Spanish culture.
So behind this musical journey lies a pioneering project, Hanin y Son Cubano, an idea born in Havana in the mind of Lebanese Greek producer Michel Eleftheriades. And just like this, a unique genre was born, Arab-Cuban music. A bold yet instinctive choice, because Hanin quite literally has Latin rhythm in her veins. Among her signature songs, Ala Bali by Abdel Wahab, which she turned into an Oriental Latin ballad. La Fuente, an original song with Cuban tones, tenderly recounting her childhood memories in Ain al-Arish, that Lebanese village where young girls used to fill their water jars under the watchful eyes of the boys.
What captivates me in this universe of music, this is because I love world music and because I love ethnic music and I love the music of every country that marks the culture of this country and the songs that became legacy and heritage in this country. For example, I like Russian music, I like Indian music, Greek music, Tzigan, Latin music, and especially Latin music, because now I'm so used to make it with Arabic music, and it's like it's in my blood.
Hanin is a voice, a soul, a rhythm, a true ambassador of musical fusion, of that beauty born from the meeting of cultures. Elsa Yazbek Sharabati, Radio Exterior de España.
You're listening to the English Language Service of Spanish National Radio.
those sharp reveries had assaulted him, whetting his appetite, gashing one's grey evening skies with fierce light. Enough fresh air for now. But beyond a night lies awake, full of drool from void hunger, without stars. His stale nights a being tired of tiredness, in dreamless non-nightmares, for no reason.
Spanish writer and poet Jorge López Llorente just released his first poetry collection fully in English, Dreamscapes, and he's been kind enough to join us today in Casa de la Radio to tell us all about it. Jorge, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, first of all, I would like to start with a bit of an introduction. How would you define Dreamscapes?
So Dreamscapes is my English language debut, but my second poetry book, because I published my first poetry book in Spanish in Spain. And it's a poetry book, a shorter one, a poetry chapbook with a variety of poetic forms, both modern and traditional, both narrative and lyrical poetry with, for example, blackout poems, prose poems, also in a sequence of increasingly regular sonnets. Mm-hmm. So a variety of different styles of poems tied together with similar themes.
Mm-hmm. So why did you choose the title Dreamscapes? Where does it come from?
So I think titles are super important for mm-hmm. books. Perhaps one of the most important things when I'm planning a book or thinking about it. And for this one, I wanted it to be a different title, a word that would stand out. And as I'm a translator in my day job and also a bilingual writer, I'm fascinated by untranslatable words. I love them. So I thought, how about coming up with an untranslatable word for the title? Mm. And I thought of the wordplay of dreamscapes as in landscapes and escapes as in escaping, because, the poetry book is all about dreams and our desire for escapism versus reality. And also it's a way of sort of maximizing the wonderful wordplay that's possible in the English language, which I think is the richest language I know of in terms of wordplay. So it was a way of, maximizing what the English language had to offer and trying to be a bit untranslatable.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because as you said, this is your second poetry book. The first one you actually published in Spanish, Los Ojos Desdibujados. But now, why did you choose to write in English?
So it was a very early decision I made when I was like a teenager and I started to commit to writing as an intentional, regular thing. That I've been lucky enough to have a bilingual education. I've been in the British education all my life. I'm very privileged to have had that chance to grow up bilingual, essentially. And also I study in the UK, I study English literature at the University of Oxford, so my appreciation for English literature is immense. And very early on, when I started writing, I decided that it would be a pity, it would be a waste to having the chance to write in both languages to discard one of them, because I love both of them equally. So I really make an effort to alternate when I write a book or a series of pieces in one language, I make an active effort to try to write in the other language. So I knew my second book had to be in English because I kind of felt like I owed it to English.
Mm-hmm. And your third book in Spanish again?
Hopefully.
Or
I think
so. Any other languages?
in English and Spanish. That's overcomplicating my life enough, I think. Yeah, I have it, actually, my third book already written, and mm-hmm. it's in Spanish. So I'm keeping in with the alternation.
Now, how would you say that writing in English compares to writing in Spanish, particularly in the case of poetry?
That's a fascinating question. Yeah, both languages are so different, especially in poetry, because poetry really gets you to think about language in a way that no other type of writing does. And English is sort of, I see it more of a stiff language in terms of like word order. In Spanish, you can move adjectives around, for example, in front of nouns or after the noun. And in English, it's more rigid in that sense. But it compensates that lack of flexibility with the room for wordplay and for word mm-hmm. creation. Like, I would have struggled to come up with the title, something like Dreamscapes, using that wordplay in Spanish.
Yeah.
Whereas in Spanish, maybe I can move words around and I feel more free in that sense, but then I'm more limited in word creation. So both languages have their edge of extra creativity. And perhaps Spanish is also a bit more musical, but English also has its sort of particular mm-hmm. rhythm. So yeah, both are equally fascinating and have their own little advantages.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have seen that you have published also some single poems in English, some in Spanish. And I was wondering, for Dreamscapes, how did you make the selection of the poems that you were going to include? Do they have a common thread?
Yeah, so the common thread is there's a lot of sea imagery in them. That's the sort of central idea that I came up with. And the main themes are sort of dreams and our desire for escapism and our imaginations and the poetry of that and how that clashes with our everyday reality, which can be quite banal and quite frustrating, even alienating, especially in terms of our capitalist society and the materialism that's in our routine, and also the false escapism, the false dreams of ads and advertising, yeah, and again, capitalist materialism. So those two threads, like sea imagery, which I associate the sea with dreams personally a lot, and the clash between dreams and reality, that's the main theme. And when I had a couple of poems in that along those lines, I sort of forced a bit of an order on it. So it was really a conscious decision. And I think this is probably the most structured book I will ever write, because I really wanted it to be very symmetrical in terms of structure. Mm-hmm. Like, the initial poem is a bit of a mirror image of the last poem, and all across the book, like, the second poem is in conversation with the penultimate poem and so on. So yeah, it was a very conscious decision as soon as I had said the first couple of poems about dreams and the sea. A boy takes in the ocean. He is a whim for a quicksand caress, which can hold sun rays tight and suck them in, overflowing and draining all else. He is sandburnt, a statue. A man is swept over by waves. He is a prayer for a topaz sky, a crevice and a hardness, a cut with a sting of salty scar. He is a footprint, foam drowned.
Now, you've mentioned that you have been writing since you were a teenager. Where does your interest in literature, in writing, come from?
I honestly don't know. My parents say that when I was a kid, like 7 years old or so, I came up to them and said I wanted to be a writer, apparently. Mm-hmm. Don't know if it's true or not, but yeah. And it maybe has to do with my father a lot, because he's also a writer. He's just a novelist, but also a writer, novelist in Spanish. But he's also very, very cosmopolitan person, an Anglophile, speaks English fluently. And growing up, like, his bookshelves of English literature, of loads of US, Canadian, UK books and classics, both in Spanish and translation, that sort of steered me towards literature very heavily, and towards English literature in particular. So I think it probably has a lot to do with him as well.
And why poetry in particular?
I think poetry is the most fascinating genre of writing. Like, I also write fiction. I also write short stories, but poetry is sort of the limits of language, where you can really play with words, where you can imagine things without the restrictions of a plot, for example, or voice or a narrator. It's the absolute freedom for a writer. So, and also, honestly, in practical terms, as a writer with a day job, like most writers, poetry is also the type of writing that gives you more freedom to just get down to write. Because if you're committing to a long piece of fiction, well, you're going to have to spend more time on it. Whereas poetry is both freedom in the use of language, and also you can have written many parts of this poetry book just on the metro, like commuting. So yeah, that's why I probably turned to it a bit more than fiction, at least for now.
Did you write a lot of it during commuting on the metro?
A lot of it. A lot of drafts, obviously. Not ideal for proper editing. But yeah, I think at least half of my poems I draft while on some sort of type of public transport. Yeah.
Well, some of your influences are actually mentioned in the book. It starts with an extract by Luis Cernuda, and you also mention Roy Lichtenstein. How would you say that they influenced this book and your poetry in general?
Yeah, so I try to have a variety of influences from different languages because, well, as a bilingual poet, that's what comes naturally to me. And I chose the epigraph from Luis Cernuda because he's one of my favorite poets and definitely a major influence. And I thought he was the ideal poet who was managing sea imagery as well as the idea of dreams and longing and how that clashes with reality, right? He's an expert on that topic in particular. So I wanted to both honor him and that influence and also try to get English-speaking readers to appreciate him, because I think he's absolutely underappreciated. But obviously, some English language poets have been a major influence as well in this book. I'm thinking of some of my favorites, like Hart Crane, like Derek Walcott, who had loads of poems about the Caribbean, the sea. I've never been there, but I adore them and they influenced me loads. And they're also experts at what I'm trying to do in this book, which is trying to combine narrative and lyrical poetry, which Cernuda also did, but I think Hart Crane and Derek Walcott were the ones who excelled. Like Hart Crane's The Bridge and Derek Walcott's Omeros in particular, those were the kind of role models I was thinking of when writing the book. Like I wanted to write a narrative poem, but also one that maintained that sort of lyricism and that mystery that they managed to keep up.
And in the case of Roy Lichtenstein, who's not a writer, how did he influence you?
So I'm a big art fan as well. I think apart from literature, art is my second favorite source of inspiration. And I thought, in particular, Drowning Girl, which is the painting by Roy Lichtenstein, which inspired a particular poem in this book, was very important and sort of tied in with the themes very well, because that painting shows the sort of very superficial pop culture that Roy Lichtenstein was engaging in. Like there's this, in the painting, there's this woman in pain sort of drowning and calling out for her lover. And there's that tension in the painting between, is this like genuine emotion? Is like the painter representing genuine emotion, or is he just replicating a little cutout from a comic book, which is what it came from? And so that tied in perfectly with this idea of, are we in our reality using like genuine dreams and our imagination for genuine emotion, or are we just staying on the surface on like the materialistic level of things, on a shallow pop culture level, which is in a throwaway fashion?
Well, Jorge, now that the book is out and it's available for purchase worldwide, have you had any reviews, any comments yet?
So the first review was a very kind review from Chewers magazine in the US. And I hope more reviews will come out in due time. And yeah, and readers already telling me it's interesting, that they think it's a bit more different from and a bit more unique compared to my first book. So I'm happy to hear that, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that we have spoken about your own experience with Dreamscapes, now that the book is out, what do you hope readers take away from it?
So I really hope poetry readers are surprised in some way by the book and find it in some way fresh or innovative, because that's my end goal. I want to try to surprise myself when I'm writing. I try to innovate. I try to not repeat myself. So if poetry readers feel that, that would be amazing. But I would also love for more fiction readers to come on board, because with my first poetry book, many readers messaged me saying, well, I've only read novels lately, or I almost never read poetry. And apparently for them, that poetry book sort of showed them, that opened up their minds a bit, that poetry can also be narrative, and it can also have aspects of fictions in it that might appeal to them. So this book, which is even more narrative than the first one, if it can appeal to some fiction readers and bring them on board, I'd be very, very happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that it will. Jorge López Llorente, writer, poet, author of Dreamscapes, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
We are now reaching the end of today's broadcast, and we say goodbye with Melendi. The Spanish singer-songwriter will be headlining the Arnold Sound Festival next Friday in Buriana, in the region of Valencia. This song is called Te Quiero Como El Mar, I Love You Like the Sea.
Sentado en un coche de hielo, que se derrite cada amanecer, no puedo pedirte que te quedes hasta mañana. Soy en tu pelo, quisiera ir de la mano de este sentimiento que llevo tan dentro, y me cuesta tanto tener callado cuando te encuentro, porque te quiero como el mar quiere un pez que nada adentro, dándole de respirar, protegiéndolo del viento.
You've been listening to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio with Amy Egan and Marilyn Quintana. Today we've had help from sound technician Rodrigo López and production help from Cristina Dorado. We thank you for listening and hope you tune in again for future broadcasts.
Porque el sol ya no la mima, porque el sol ya no la toca, pero cuando se ponga buena, ahí brillará en tu ventana morena, pa' decir con luz blanca y sincera, que esta noche quiero morirme a tu vera, porque te quiero como el mar, quiere un pez que nada adentro, dándole de respirar, protegiéndolo del viento hoy, porque te quiero dibujar desnuda en el firmamento, pa' hacer todavía más bonito el universo. Quisiera ser tu amuleto y veneno en tu aire. Quisiera ser para ti un vicio inconfesable. Yo quisiera llegar hasta Marte, desnudo sobre tu cama. Quisiera volver a hechizarme en tu bruja mirada. Porque te quiero como el mar, quiera un pez que nada adentro, dándole de respirar.